Log Talk Radio.
Listening to the podcast for Saturday, March the 11th, 2017. I'd like to thank Wade for filling in for me last week as I took care of some other stuff. We'll be joined momentarily by a friend, Rich Fan. I'm going to be happy to hear from him. And you may call on this show, Saturday Night Edition, 515-605-9345. 515-615-9345. We'll be back on a Friday, on a Friday edition next weekend, next Friday. But again, special one night, Saturday edition of the PW Torch Livecast with Bruce Mitchell and Rich Fan. Rich, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thanks, Bruce. I know you had a good Friday, so hopefully this Saturday is just as good at 9 p.m. And that's about as far as I can take supporting Duke without outwardly saying anything of that nature positive about the team down south.
Well, you know, I mean, I was just going to say that you need to give a family member a nice big hug for me. You're not on the same page, but decent people in your family are. So I think that's that was awesome. Yesterday was. In the Barber Center, ACC tournament is a special thing, and Duke Carolina is a special thing, and boy, was that a game. Oh, my gosh. So anyway, I'm really happy. We'll see how tonight goes in the finals, but what a year. So far, that's not over yet, at least I hope not. So we have a special request from a listener to cover a subject, sort of like Casey Kasem was covered on America's Top 40. You're too young for America's Top 40 with Casey Kasem, I'm thinking.
Okay, I'm an old soul, as my grandmother would have said. So even though I'm only 35, 36 in May, I am well aware of Casey and the Top 40.
Okay, so the special request comes from listener Keller Wade at, following up on Wade, just a few minutes ago for Torch VIP members, Wade and I did both part one and part two of the Bruce Mitchell audio show. We covered a whole ton of stuff because there's a whole ton of stuff to cover, and I'm sure we'll get to a lot of it here. But one of the things he asked that we cover on this show, because we didn't get to it in the 2 hours that we did, was the Talking Smack comment by Daniel Bryan that, in response to jousting back and forth between him and Miz, and that work shoot stuff, Miz says, "You can't wrestle." And he goes, "Well, they won't let me wrestle, and in a year and a half, we'll see." And he wants us to talk it. So what was your reaction to that? And I'll chime in too.
Okay. I think going to those comments, first of all, I am in love with this version of the Miz. Madman Mike, who's got receipts for everyone in terms of things he wants to talk about. But specifically for Daniel Bryan, I'm terrified. I watched last week during the New Japan show the gentleman on a Kakeshi, and then even follow up with a DDT attempt, go paralyzed, and is now still talking about coming back to Maki Hama. And so I understand with pro wrestlers there's this streak of I can get healthy, but when you don't have the ability to feel your legs and you're in a hospital bed and you want to come back and get dropped on your head some more, that doesn't make sense to me. Fast forward to Daniel Bryan, you have a daughter on the way, you have a wife, you have a family, you want to continue. You think with a year and a half, almost 2 years off, the whatever negative effects from your concussions, which were bad enough for him to lie about to WWE personnel, you want to go to CMLL and do a hair match, you want to go to New Japan, you want to go to Ring of Honor, and even, I read The Observer, and even if you have a style in your head, you think, I feel like and I don't know if you agree, but I feel like this is the script that's being written for the sequel to The Wrestler that no one wants to see the ending of.
Yeah, I'm really, it makes me uncomfortable too. It's not that there, you know, doctors practice medicine, and so there's different opinions of diagnosis. I'm certainly not a doctor, but the WWE doctors are, you know, have serious reservations about this. And you're right. And Daniel Bryan comes from, I see him as this, I don't see him. He is this leader of a new generation of wrestlers, and not all the new generation follows how he sees things, but he takes this as his hobby, his passion, not even his hobby, but his passion. And while he wants to get paid fair value for what he does, he's not in it for the glory. He's not in it to get laid. He's not in it. He's in wrestling because he loves the physical challenge of wrestling, of putting on a wrestling match. And there's a lot of people that have followed Daniel Bryan that have seen themselves in him, whether it's size or athletic ability or just immersing themselves into something. And they have followed him, and he succeeded, but he talks about it in his book. I mean, the one thing you sit there and go that he has a blind spot for was getting hurt, particularly putting his head at risk in concussions. And he got into WWE, and even at that time, he was, you wondered whether he could make it through. And now they're telling him, and WWE is going to take performers who they can, they're going to take performers they can make money with and keep them working for as long as they can. And now they've got this system, this flawed system of checks and balances in place with the wellness policy. And so there has to be there is something serious with Bryan, and the idea that, you can wrestle a safer style, you can, but that risk is still there. And the risk gets larger the more concussions you have. We don't know how many concussions we have. We know they've been several. And the risk, very much it gets bigger. And then he has, he's not a spendthrift. He's got the family on the way, everything you're talking about. He's putting these things at risk if he goes back. Now, I always take shoots with a grain of salt, SmackDown Live, and what Mike Mazarian says, Mike the Miz says on the show, and Wade and I had a conversation about his comments on SmackDown about the type of couple that John Cena and Nikki Bella are. But this is, but I think this is something that a place where WWE would not want Daniel Bryan to talk, because it's not in their best interest to have their fans thinking that Daniel Bryan could wrestle, could provide them entertainment, but the fuddy-duddy doctors at WWE won't let them do it, and he wants to do it. That's not in WWE's interest, and this idea that like Daniel Bryan can leave their company and go wrestle and everything will be great, you can see him then, but we have to wait because of WWE. There's a lot of people that care about their entertainment first, and they're not going to understand that, or they're not going to care about that.
And as a dovetail to this, Bruce, I hate to interrupt you, but as a dovetail to what we're talking about, and I don't know if you and Wade talked about this, think about what they did on Monday in Chicago. They had Triple H in character talking about Triple H and the WWE, the entity, and how well they take care of their wrestlers. That was not lost on me
connect these two events together. We definitely talked about that. It's part of their narrative now. It's part of their narrative, the way they've used other business considerations and put it into their narrative, that they want their fans and followers and people who watch on television believe that they do have the highest quality medical care, and that they take care of the wrestlers. Well, here's Daniel Bryan on their own show saying, I can go wrestle. I just got this contract, and in a year and a half, when I get out of WWE, the Major League of Wrestling, when I get out of WWE, I'm going to go wrestle somewhere else. And that's not a message you want sent. And I would love to see Daniel Bryan again to wrestle for my entertainment sake, for the business's entertainment. I think it'd be phenomenal. He has a connection with the crowd. but it's not worth him getting injured. It's not worth taking any more risk. He's done everything there is that he's had a very good career. He's had a great career, and he's reached the pinnacle against real odds. And now he has a chance for a second chapter in his life with a wife and a family, and depending on him, before he knew he was going to be a father, he was looking into other interests. He was going to go back to college and study ecological concerns at college and have a whole new life. And he's been pulled back in, you know, because the money's good and what he's doing, and that keeps him in wrestling. And it's been, a lot of wrestlers talk about how it's hard to divorce yourself from performing in front of the crowd, that's an addiction. And he really suffered when Vincent Mann told him you're retired, and he was suffered emotionally, and then he's back around it. And so, I think that was something that came from him. I think that's something that WWE would not want him to say. And I'm hoping in the next year and a half that he will, with that baby there, with the family, that he will take the bigger considerations in line more than just performing in professional wrestling as much as he loves to do it.
And I would also think about, and I'm sure at some point we'll talk about this, what happened last night gives me indications that one of the places he wants to go may not be as willing to accommodate him as I once thought they would be, and that's Ring of Honor. The way they backed down to what TNA did, which, in my personal opinion, I have no horse in the race as far as belonging to a organization or having put a foot in a ring, but I think the level of unprofessionalism and the level of just Bush League tactics they used with what they claimed to be an ally in the world of independent wrestling by way of trying to cripple their pay-per-view buys with the letter they sent saying, basically, if the Broken Hardys show up, we're suing the pants off you and whoever puts that pay-per-view on. I think if they're that risk-averse to even mention Broken during the pay-per-view, I would imagine a year from now, a year and a half from now, if Brian is able to go to work for them, I don't know if Sinclair would be willing to pay to watch that man get crippled or perhaps die on their television.
Yeah, and I wasn't even thinking in those terms, but yes, that can definitely happen. But then, he's very intelligent and usually his cognitive abilities, on a slower pace. I mean, that's really scary. That's really tough. So I don't know. I mean, it scares me a little bit. I mean, it's not. I hope that obviously Wade and I on the show for VIP members talked about everything going on with Ring of Honor, with TNA, with the Hardys, and one of the things and we talked about the history of TNA compared to the history of Ring of Honor because you've got this 15th anniversary. They both share almost. And mm-hmm. One of the things with TNA was always not really much consideration for acts that were marketable that had problems that WWE had to drop them for. And, you just because you can make some money with something and you don't have the health and wellness, the resources to put all that into place, you just take them. And I think there's a moral issue with that, too. I mean, I think there's something, there's something wrong with that. And so I'm hoping that cooler heads prevail. And also I think WWE is really making a mistake. I know they like the talk of having Miz and Daniel Bryan kind of semi shoot back and forth on each other. It gives a different tone to the show, but they're still, it's like they're building up this match that we'll never see. That's better than between Miz and Daniel Bryan, that is a better personality conflict, if not wrestling match, than anything we'll see with the Miz involved. And I think that's a mistake too. I think that's something that there's got to be some happy medium on talking smack and on these network shows where you can get more spontaneity and more you know, more of what has really rejuvenated Miz's career without going off into tangents that you just can't deliver on. And that's so yeah, I mean, but I thought that was really, you know, again, it's interesting, it's a topic of conversation, but how far, you know, where can you take it? Where does it go? And I root for wrestlers after all these years. What I really root for, as much as seeing great matches, as much as seeing the great electric atmosphere and for people to, you know, a balance where the performers and the companies both thrive together. I root for the performers to get to the other side of their careers with enough resources, physically, financially, mentally, to enjoy the next part of their life and to have a next part of their life. And this kind of, you know, Ryan being this way, it scares me for him, and it scares me for the example that he sets for a lot of wrestlers out there. And, you know, a lot of wrestlers out there see his path as a path that they can follow. To success, to even in professional wrestling. So we're going to go to phone calls in just a moment. There's another topic that Wade and I did not talk about that I'm hoping Rich will want to join me in talking about, but we'll go to a commercial and be right back.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
CWF Mid-Atlantic in Gibsonville tonight with their episode 100 show. I'll be missing that, but I want to send a corny shout out to them, particularly my friend Jerry Carey, who just tweeted that. Just tweeted back to me. So Trevor Lee, of course, in TNA. We'll see where all that goes. Let's go to some phone calls, and then Rich will talk to some folks. So, I mean, I'll talk to you about this one subject that we didn't have. We'll do that. All right, let's go to 615. 615, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce, this is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee. How are you doing?
Doing fine, Kenny. How are you?
I'm doing good. I see you're getting ready, looking forward for Duke tonight, aren't you?
I certainly am. I go back to when I was 5 years old. I know Rich, but I don't have the connection to Duke that Rich has. As much as, you know, I lived next door to Bucky Waters when I was 5 years old, but a Durham, my whole life. But on the other hand, I'm not married to a Duke cheerleader. Rich Fan is married to a Duke cheerleader. Isn't that right, Rich?
That is. And she's currently downstairs with my mom, who is, much to my chagrin, a converted Duke fan, and my mother-in-law playing with my son. We had his birthday party earlier today, and they are waiting with bated breath for that game. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm a man alone right now. I mean, usually Trey would say Boo Duke, but now he's since his birthday party came along, he's looking for extra toys, so he's trying to stay babyface for everybody.
Oh, you need to follow your son's example. You're right. Turn babyface. But anyway, yeah. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, all right. What I want to talk about, this actually does involve the Carolinas to an extent, and that is, you know, Charlotte, you know, has grown so big over the last few years, as you know. Do you think it is possible with that stadium, the Bank of America Stadium, if WWE wanted to ever host a WrestleMania, do you think it's possible, like, let's say, some of the smaller markets, and I don't know how they go about as far as selecting cities, obviously they go for the fair weather, big market cities, but do you think it's possible for some southern cities like outside of Atlanta or Miami or Orlando, like let's say Charlotte or Nashville, to possibly ever host a WrestleMania in the near future, or do they just have a selective list of cities similar to how the NFL selects their Super Bowl?
I think that they look at the metropolitan area around it. and look at the population base, and that's a big part of it. Can it support? Of course, WrestleMania crowds come from all over the world. They don't come from the local, they don't come from Nashville or Charlotte or Orlando necessarily. They come from, they come from all over the world. But I think Charlotte is, I believe, 5 million people within an hour's drive. So perhaps they would look at that, but I think that there's other bigger markets that bigger metropolitan areas that they would look at first still. And there hasn't been any talk of a WrestleMania in Pittsburgh, has there?
No, I don't think it'd be in their best interest, because even though Heinz Field could hold probably conservatively between 62 and 70, depending on how they arranged the seating, maybe more if they got greedy. It's as of today, it's March 11th. On Thursday, it was 50 degrees. Friday, it was 12. Today, it's 19 as we speak. So that's a heck of a game to gamble that in 3 weeks' time, you're going to have perfect conditions. Because I went to the WrestleMania, it was 29. In New York, and that was rough. It wasn't necessarily cold per se, but it was rainy and coming off the water. Especially here in Pittsburgh, it'd be the same problem. Even if it is a nice day, so to speak, by the time you get to the evening matches, and if it's a 7-hour extravaganza like they plan this year, it's going to be pretty cold.
Yeah, I think here in North Carolina, the weather would be okay. I mean, more than likely, it'd be. It'd be coming into spring. It might be the worst. It's going to be as upper 40s. Now, I've quit being a weather forecaster because because Friday it was 70 degrees here, and it was 70 this week, and then we're waiting on some snow today. So. Who knows? But still, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that, and I also, this man grew up in North Carolina in Pinehurst and moved to New York when he was a teenager, and sees himself as a New Yorker, sees himself as a Northeasterner. And I don't know that he wants to bring WrestleMania to wrestling country the way he would see it. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous at this point because everything's, it's all around the country. So Tennessee or North Carolina, he may have that against it, but I've never heard of those cities bidding for it. And that, that's a big part of it too. The cities look at it and go, we fit the parameters of what WWE wants. And because it does turn your city into an tourist attraction for that week, particularly when WWE is looking to do the four pay-per-views. And, so I would look for one of the big four pay-per-views to come to a market like this first, and then maybe after that a WrestleMania. But yeah, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I thought it would be kind of cool that maybe tie in some of the legacy of the Jim Crockett Mid-Atlantic aspect for. Like any time they do a Hall of Fame and induction ceremony, and maybe bring out some of them, because I know that those NWA Legends Fan Fests have done very well in the past, and I just thought that would be sort of a cool way of doing it. And also, one quick question about you were touching a little bit about Ring of Honor. I want to get your thoughts on the main event last night. How did you like the Chris Daniels Adam Cole match?
I didn't see it. I had a 14-hour day and then a 12-hour day plus that game. And so I talked about the implications of Christopher Daniels winning. I like the idea that that Daniels was in the first show, and then you had the 15th anniversary show, and you had a credible story, and that he really had this one chance to win the world title and he won it. I like that in general, but I haven't seen the match yet. Rich, did you see the match?
I did. I saw the match. I saw the whole pay-per-view, and I was fighting sleep because with my family here, it's been tough, not necessarily in a negative way, but in terms of, like, activities and stuff. So I was pretty tired. But by the time I got to the main event,
That was a very nice cover. Not in a negative way, real quickly. I like that. You covered yourself. That was good.
Oh, yeah. It was just in terms of entertaining. And my mom doesn't come up to Pittsburgh regularly, so when she does come up, I try to take her to as many places around here as possible so she can kind of get a feel for the area, because her and my dad, when I was in school, and I apologize for the long answer for a short question, they didn't really get a chance to sightsee. They would pick me up, drop me off. So now that I've kind of set up roots here, I like to take them to little places when they come up and visit. But that match, I don't get emotionally affected. And I don't want to sound like a weirdo, but I don't get emotionally affected a lot during wrestling matches. I enjoy them. But, you know, the Shawn Michaels match with Ric Flair, that was emotional for me, seeing him and with the "I'm sorry, I love you." The path that he took, Chris Daniels, getting from that 15-year journey to get to the point where he won that title, I didn't get choked up, but I was pretty, like, I was jazzed for him. I was just, like, over the moon for him, because you see the emotion, him breaking down in tears. It was a very 80s, very non-Northeastern storyline they played, even down to Frankie Kazarian, who had betrayed him at the last second, instead of hitting his opponent with the weapon, throwing it away. And that little move alone, in the WWE, he would have been hit with it, and we would be arguing like we do with Bayley and everything else. Throwing the weapon away, pulling off the shirt to reveal he has a Chris Daniels legacy shirt. Those little things, it was so amazing. And then to see them not only put him on his shoulders like you're wont to do with the face, having him get the original Ring of Honor title in addition to the title that he won, it was very awe-inspiring in terms of a wrestling moment. And it was genuine. It wasn't kind of like where they went halfway in the Cruiserweight Classic, I would say, with Brian Kendrick, and then erased all of it by the stuff they've had him do since. It was something I felt I could believe in, and if I could be that, you know, guy in the bleachers that everyone, it was real to me. And it was very real to me for that.
Well, that's that best, yeah, best type of work that's based in a reality. And there's, you know, and I've definitely seen Daniel's promos in the last few months, and they're tremendous. They're so believable, you know, because it is his reality. He's coming to the end of his career. He's been a workman, you know, he's been a journeyman, and for him to, and then you can use that championship for him to validate his whole career. That's a real story. And so I can see that the emotions in that are going to be real.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. I mean, I happened to catch one of the promos he did on the show, and it was just so pure and so genuine. And, you know, I think I called a while back and asked if whether he was champion caliber or not. But either way, I mean, he did deserve it, in my opinion. If there was ever a chance for that "you deserve a chant" actually meant something, it probably would have meant it tonight. But or last night. But anyway, that's really all I had to say. I hope you guys have a good rest of the night. And I want to give a shout out real quick to VIP and Go VIP, because I haven't had a chance to really enjoy going VIP, and I happened to sample some of the audio shows, including the last episode of Pro Wrestling Focus, the show that Wade hosted in the early 90s, where you, Bruce, was a guest on. And I thought, wow, you know, that golden voice of yours, it never changed. So you guys have a good rest of the night.
All that yelling and screaming I did last night probably changed some of it, but yeah, I appreciate that. That's I very much appreciate that. You can pwtorch.com/govip. So let's go to our friend who I don't think was as excited as I was, but maybe as excited as you were last night. Let's go to Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to PW Torch Livecast.
How you doing, Rich? And how you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing great.
I'm good.
I'm doing great. There's darn referees.
Hey, Bruce, I want to say this off rip. Forget Duke. I hate Duke. And I don't want to talk about yesterday. You hit me up at 3 o'clock replying to a tweet, and I was so upset that I couldn't go to sleep for 3 hours.
Oh, no. I woke up, looked down, there you are crying about referees. So I just replied, and I'm like, I went back to sleep.
I couldn't go to sleep for 3 hours because you made me go back and replay the game and look at that all over again. I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
I was a douche troll before you anyone ever used the word troll. I mean, I just like, if you want to know, I learned how to, I mean, I knew how to heckle before I went to the Greensboro Coliseum to see wrestling. And it was from going to Cameron Indoor Stadium and facing off with Carolina fans all over the place. So, but I didn't mean to, you're the first Carolina fan to make me feel guilty in a long, long time. I didn't mean to like do that to you. You're great.
Ah, man, I don't even want to talk about it again. Let's get to wrestling on.
Fair enough.
Well, I want to get to this. Bruce, I was with you for a little second with the Brock Lesnar and Goldberg, but now I'm back to where I was, and I'm kind of with a little bit with Wade, but on a different touch. I know you say that Brock Lesnar and Goldberg should be the main event and should have the title and all of that. But when I hear you say that, I understand you're talking about numbers. And with WWE going down each year in numbers, last year they was at a 2.5, this year they're at a 2.0, you might as well say. And they're not switching over fans or getting casual fans to join over. That's only a one-day boost from WrestleMania to Raw. That's only a 24-hour boost. Shouldn't they be thinking about making new stars instead of trying to promote old stars and trying to keep WrestleMania name hype instead of just introducing you new stars like new the NBA do?
Let me address that. And before I address that, I'm gonna throw it to Rich. Rich, this is an ongoing conversation we're probably gonna have for a long, long time. And you know, I was surprised Monday, and Wade and I went into this in great detail on the audio, but I was surprised Monday in the aftermath of Fastlane of how many people were upset the way Durrell is. I mean, and even more, they like hated the pay-per-view because they hated that Braun Strowman lost, and they very much hated that Bill Goldberg won the Universal title against Kevin Owens, a multi-dimensional performer so quickly and were just angry as they could be. And so address what he's talking about.
Okay, it's two-faceted for me. First, I would list, but I for time purposes, because I know we have some other callers and we have the topic you want to talk about, I'd list all the wrestlers that they have on the roster currently that are direct descendants of the Daniel Bryan, CM Punk generational decision to bring them into the WWE onto the main roster. And while they aren't stars, I was here in an ice rink in the outskirts of Pittsburgh watching Kevin Steen wrestle in Ring of Honor, and I told my buddy, it's a shame this dude will never be in the WWE because he doesn't look the way they like guys to look. And he's now, having recently lost to Goldberg in a pay-per-view main event, there is not a lot I can say that makes me think that's a downgrade for him. In terms of the whole, Darrell's premise about the whole idea of the stars, et cetera, I can't fight you on that. But what I will say is, and I'll take one of my favorite Metallica songs, everyone thought the soothing light at the end of the tunnel was the promos that Owens had made the last few weeks. And it was really the freight train of, we know where this is going. Same thing with Braun Strowman and all the awesome feats of strength. We know by SummerSlam, Roman Reigns will be the alpha. And everyone, both the people who are more casual and the more ardent fandom, talk themselves into, no, they won't do this again. There's no way they would do this again. It's happening. And as each step happens, we get a pushback. And I don't believe the WWE sees the pushback as an issue because it's noise. And because they see noise as progress, noise as success, it's just going to be louder and louder going to the moment where Roman becomes the alpha again. I for one, am beyond the stage where I can argue against it or get mad about it because it is. And I can't argue reality. I can't get mad about reality. I mean, you can, but it's a waste of my energy. I'd rather talk about the fact that you have the heat that they allow, because think about this, and I'll shut up. the heat they allowed Kevin Owens to generate in the 5 minutes prior to the 19 seconds of ignominy that people are complaining of, that is, to me, a sign of trust that I don't think they've given a lot of people. Because he didn't get to say, he didn't have to say a word, and he drove that crowd into a frenzy. He was on the Austin show, and I think Wade and I talked about that last week. And Austin said, take a powder. I love when you take a powder because no one else in the company takes a powder. And that man took a seven-minute powder. And at no point did you hear boring chanted. At no point did people get up and grab a beer or some popcorn or decide they had to go to the bathroom. They were engrossed, and they hated his guts because they're like, just get in the ring and fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think he benefited from it. I think the deal here is this idea that if they didn't make Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg in particular the main event of WrestleMania, and they made Kevin Owens and Finn Balor the main event of WrestleMania, that it would do the same business, that it would make those two performers the stars that Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg are. The problem
is, John Cena versus that guy from Atlanta.
Right.
That's another one people were pushing back with regards to the SmackDown side of the ledger.
Right. And the thing with this is WWE has this 3-hour Raw flagship show that that they've got to put content on, and so they overexpose their new stars. And they need to stop doing that. They need to figure out a way, and I think there is a way. But it takes time and discipline, and it really does take the discipline to build up matches for a while, even television main events, and hold off having everybody face everybody over and over again on the cable television, on your primary barker, to treat some current stars, get them off your television, treat them like they're special, and bring them in and back and forth, and then also the micromanaging of the promos, the micromanaging of all that corporate jargon, you know, get off of that. But all this would take time to get roots in, and in the meantime, so you've got this base of television stars for performers who aren't as over as the people they don't. You know, television should get you over. And it does to a certain extent, but then it also flattens them out. And then, so when they bring in someone who's been untouched by that, who has charisma, who knows his act and can do it, like Goldberg, and people have fond memories of them, they stand apart. And they've kept Brock Lesnar apart, too. And he benefits from not being there all the time. And Undertaker benefits from not being all the time. They need to do that with current wrestlers, but they haven't yet. So to complain that you would have less of an exciting WrestleMania without these special attractions. The formula now is, you know, bring in The Rock, bring in these outsiders, these part-timers to make matches that you don't get to see all the time. And that makes WrestleMania seem special. That draws it in. And it also WrestleMania does. So you can't get away from that yet. It's going to run out, but address the problem on Raw. Don't address the problem at WrestleMania. If they get caught short, that's the day when they're really going to start suffering, because WrestleMania is going to start going down. They do a huge part of their business by peaking to that. And you know, if you look at it, because they peaked to WrestleMania, Royal Rumble's important, because they peaked to, you know, and that's a big deal. And so, it's not Bill Goldberg's fault. It's not Brock Lesnar's fault that they're more over than better in-ring performers. It's just how the cards have laid out, how WWE has laid the cards out. They need to change how they lay the cards out, but they need not to cut off their nose to spite their face by having Kevin Owens beat Bill Goldberg, or have Kevin Owens escape the inevitability of the spear. Because the whole formula is Bill Goldberg wins, and so he's an unstoppable force. And then you've got Brock Lesnar, who no one can believe he beat in the first place. That's where all the intrigue is. And so if you mess with that formula, you're going to lose intrigue. You have to follow through until the end. And then Wade and I talked a lot about this. I'm really interested in this match because it's a money match, but also there's a con man aspect of it, of making a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people really want this match. And then what are they really going to deliver? Because Goldberg, they have protected really well. He looks credible all the time. And then you get people who are mad because, well, he's a 49-year-old man. That's the 50-year-old man who hasn't wrestled in 17 years. That's the guy who's playing Bill Goldberg. Bill Goldberg is a superhero, but the Bill Goldberg, the actor, the wrestler who's playing that superhero, has all that. So can they deliver a credible match? I don't know, but I do know this: they'll have everybody's money before they even put it on, and that's what they've done. And that part of the culture is really interesting to me too. But you can't just go if they put so and so in this spot, they're going to be as over as these part-timers. They're not. And that's the problem. And that you've got to address that problem really strongly. Got to go.
And part of that problem, too, is also because you mentioned it a couple of times, and I don't think people have kind of taken – and I don't even know if you thought about it this way. The whole framing of Bill Goldberg, Universal Champion, is from the moment we never saw on television where Stephanie McMahon walked up to him and said, "Do you have another run in you?"
Oh, yeah. I talked about that a lot. Yeah,
and that thing, that one thing that we never saw on TV, we never saw her put a finger on his chest, curl that nose up and tell him, "You've got to do," or any of that. He told us what she said. Anytime we see Stephanie with any of the other characters, like the people Darrell mentions, she, in the case of Kevin Owens over the course of the last year, let's just think of a year, didn't have time for him because he was the lesser chosen one to Triple H. Saw him as a whiner and complainer. Saw him as a joke with Chris Jericho, finally respects him begrudgingly, finds more time for Samoa Joe than him, even post-Jericho.
Yeah, I haven't made that point. We talked a lot about – that's a really good point. We talked a lot about Stephanie McMahon, but, yeah, you're right. She, he was able to frame it without having any kind of interaction with her on camera where she had to play her heel character too. And, as soon as I heard that, I was just like, that was a Paul Heyman thing. And it comes right out of his playbook. It was like, he's winning that title. I mean, you can sit there and do all this. What about Kevin Owens this and what about Kevin Owens that? But he was going to win the title. And that's where they were going. And I am a believer in all in. If you're going to go in a direction creatively with professional wrestling, go strong, go simple, and go all in. And I'm gonna be talking a lot about this until WrestleMania and after WrestleMania. And it is the shelf life of this incarnation of Bill Goldberg. And I saw Monday night that he still that the people still were with him, and they didn't cheer. They didn't cheer Lesnar F5ing him. They made they made a big reaction, but they didn't cheer it, and they were. They were taking the guy's picture with the Universal title before he came out there. It was like, there's something there. It didn't build the rating, but it didn't hurt it. And it's like, he was over, and so was Lesnar. So, I'm still where it is. I'm actually fine with the Roman Reigns direction, every bit of it, setting up these dominoes to fall, except for it's Roman Reigns. That's the part where I've got same problems that everybody has, but as far as
look at what happened on Monday when Goldberg took the F5. Goldberg took the F5,
yeah.
And a lot of people made fun of the fact that he had the Universal title. I was more enthralled, and I was more proud of a guy who hasn't been in a ring and taken a bump in almost 10 years. The first thing he did, instead of doing, and this, I don't want to turn this into a Roman bashing, but Roman could learn from Goldberg in a lot of ways, and I think this was the most important, and it goes back to what Wade talks about. The first thing Goldberg did after he came to from taking the F5 was reach for the belt. Reach for the ropes to get up. He reached for, that was the most important thing as soon as he came to, where is my belt? Where is my title? To use the WWE speak. And then after that, he got to his feet, stumbled, and then did a primal scream and stumbled away.
Yeah.
He showed weakness, but he showed that the most important thing in that moment to him was the title, the Universal title, more than him being even seen as like a complete person. Whereas Roman Reigns, the first thing, and I don't want to do it, but the first thing he would do is dust himself off, get to his feet, pick up the belt, walk away.
Yeah, that's part of it. We'll be back right after this.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
Rich, Outlaw Ron Bass passed away last week. Had a burst appendix and didn't realize, you know, this tough, raw-boned, Texas cowboy type didn't realize that he needed to get himself to the hospital faster than he did, and passed away at the age of 68. Do you remember Outlaw Ron Bass?
I remember him in bits and pieces. I remember him mainly because as I start watching a lot of this NWA stuff, my friends who, like my buddy Chris, who was big in NWA and Mid-Atlantic and all that, would point me to different specific matches, his tag team. I remember him mainly because he was one of the few guys who used the claw, which I always thought was an amazing finisher. Hey, nowadays you can't see that, like the trapezius nerve hold they use with Strowman, like that was like the, I guess, the second cousin to using the claw. And
Strowman did some old time big man stuff, and yeah, you're right, they're in the same family, the claw and the nerve pinch on the neck, and yeah, definitely, and yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I know he was in the WWE in the late 80s, but sadly I remember him more now as an adult watching YouTube of NWA stuff than of a lot of the things he did in the WWE during that, like, 86, 88, 89, something like that.
Yeah, he kind of wrapped up his career in mid-card in WWE, Outlaw Ron Bass, feuding with Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and he was one that got the barber shaved his head, and he got paid to get his head shaved, you know, a few times, and made some good money and got some exposure out of that. But he was definitely more of a Southern wrestling icon, although he wrestled as Sam Oliver Bass in Portland during the time that Buddy Rose and Roddy Piper were there, and you know, kind of the glory days, the last glory days of Portland wrestling. Sam Oliver Bass, by the way, he was the SOB, and if you want to see something that really features Ron Bass that I thought is still kind of a favorite of mine from Florida Championship Wrestling days, he was brought in to be in Florida Championship Wrestling to be Dusty Rhodes' best friend. And of course, if you're going to be Dusty Rhodes' best friend, sooner or later you're going to stick that knife right in Big Dust's back. And if you go to YouTube and see the turn of Ron Bass on Dusty Rhodes, and he does it during Dusty Rhodes, who just would give anything to be the NWA champion and could beat Harley Race, and Harley Race could never beat him, but there was always some excuse why they didn't give him the championship. Well, he finally got everything straight when the NWA appointed his best friend, Ron Bass, as special referee, and then it goes on from there. But I've seen it on there with several segments, and it's tremendous. It's really good. And I remember him you talk about him with a claw. He was the first guy I ever saw that was brought in where you knew he was there to specifically replace another big star. And in the Mid-Atlantic, the three wise men in the Mid-Atlantic of babyfaces were Ric Flair, Rick Steamboat, and Blackjack Mulligan. And then Blackjack Mulligan, I didn't find it out for many, many years later on, but got sideways with Ole Anderson, the booker, and they'd never liked each other, and disappeared right in the middle of this feud with the Iron Sheik and, America versus Iran. And I will never forget seeing Ron Bass on my television with his back to the camera, cowboy hat on, just like that looked like Mulligan's, going, I'm not Blackjack Mulligan, and then cutting a Blackjack Mulligan promo, and they put him in position to be him, and it didn't work. And I was like, and I remember, like, you know, I wasn't an insider of any stretch, but I just thought, that's not going to work. You can't replace one guy with another guy that's a lot like him, because all you're going to do is wish you had the first guy. And, you know, Lex Luger and Hulk Hogan, and there's lots of examples of that. But then, you know, his stuff in Florida was like, when he teamed with J.J. Dillon, was really good. And then he came up he followed Dusty Rhodes up when Dusty started booking in for the Crockett's, and was in, you know, he was Mid-Atlantic champion, and he was in a good mid-level tag team with Black Bart, the Long Riders. And I always thought after a while that he was good, that he was like, I mean, it was, he wasn't that top level worker, but he was a meat and potatoes brawler and a good promo, particularly a good heel promo. He had something. He had a kind of charisma. I've heard him. I never thought of this until he passed away, but I heard, you know, people compared him to Bill Watts, and he wasn't Bill Watts, except for, like, you know, wrestled a very simple style. But the guy was good, and you know, and I know that a lot of people, you know, that, you know, you hear about him at FanFest, like was talked about on this show a little while ago, and in different places, and people liked him. I mean, they thought he was a good guy. He had some success out of wrestling after that, but he was definitely, you know, the mustache goes up. The you know, Black Bart is a silent film Western villain, and that was his partner, and like it was very much that type of wrestling. And I know I was kind of surprised when he went to WWF, just because I thought that's not WWF style. But he was enough of a cartoon character too, where he did all right. He led Beefcake, and that was a fairly successful mid card feud for them. So Outlaw Ron Bass, I was sorry to see go, but I would just say, if you want to see something that, and it's very good with Dusty Rhodes. And it's one of those deals also where they're after, you know, Dusty's just heartbroken that his best friend has turned on him, and they're in the TV studio with Gordon Solie, and Gordon sets up Dusty, and Dusty's very passionate about this promo, except that there's somebody in the studio just heckling the daylights out of him. And Dusty throws a fit, you know, has a temper tantrum and starts yelling at the guy. And that kind of predated some of the more modern wrestling fans. I mean, so there's that too. But when I look back on it all those years ago, I mean, after all these years, I think I'm just, you know, Dusty wanted, halfway believed his character himself. That's what made him so good at it. And it was his money. And he had some smart aleck, you know, messing with his money and took it very seriously. And so it was good. But yeah, Ron Bass's explanation for what he does, and particularly how he makes the turn, without being too spoiler alerty, how he makes the turn was just really well played. It's my favorite Ron Bass thing that I ever saw. So, he's 68 years old. I wish that he, I don't know, a burst appendix to me is like scary. And I'd be on the floor crying for the ambulance immediately. So that's kind of something that he put off going to the hospital for a week. That's kind of amazing and tragic.
And it's funny because I saw him wrestling, because I fell in, I was telling Wade, and I think I mentioned, I alluded to it 2 weeks ago with you. I've fallen into a Barry Windham hole, and I can't get out of it.
Oh, good. Yeah, okay. Well, then you've hit Ron Bass, and you're falling in a Barry Windham.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's, I feel like the neighbor that's been put in like a bomb shelter or something is like, do you guys know you can microwave food? And everyone just looks at you like you're crazy. But it's like, Barry Windham, my God. He's a cheat code, and I watch him with Bass, and he can do a brawl. I watch him with Flair, he can do a technical masterpiece. I watch him in a tag team against Doom, and he's selling, and he's just bleeding like a stuck pig. And it's just every single time I see this guy, and then I think about when I was a preteen and a teenager, he was the Stalker. And the only thing I knew about Barry Windham up until I got the ability to look at tapes and look on the internet was, you know, if it was a snake, it would have bit me, and if I were dinner, it would be full. Like those stupid vignettes they had of him in the woods with camo and all that other stuff. Around the time of that Duke the Dumpster Drosy
Yeah, thanks a lot for that, by the way. You can hear the enthusiasm in my voice for that one. Yeah.
I was looking for it. I was like, I can't put a book. I want to make sure he gets it, but maybe other people don't get it. And when they do, they'll appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it. That's what I did. Yeah. So you're talking about Ron Bass and Barry Windham. The other maybe famous deal that Ron Bass was involved in Florida, since he betrayed Dusty Rhodes and the Dusty Rhodes family, which Barry Windham was a part of, and Blackjack Mulligan was a part of, there was a dispute because they all owned, the story went, they all owned a ranch that Dusty and Ron Bass owned property together. And they had a dispute over, of all things, a horse's saddle. Of course, if you're a cowboy, that's a very sacred thing. And so Barry went to get the horse's saddle for Dusty that Ron was holding, and Ron Bass put it up in a match on television. And it was pretty much a whole Florida Championship Wrestling Show match. It's good, particularly because of Barry Windham. But then you get the visual of the heel. You had to know this was coming with putting the horse saddle on young Barry Windham, the babyface, and riding him around the ring and just completely humiliating and leading him to leading Barry to leave town only for a yellow dog, a man suspiciously looking like Barry Windham, dressed in head to toe in a yellow bodysuit, to come after Ron Bass. And years later, the yellow dog was Brian Pillman in WCW. They tried to reprise that, but that's a match to see. If you want to see Ron Bass in a whole match with somebody really, really good, that's one to do it.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it on YouTube, and I just threw those two clips up and mentioned you on the Twitter. It's funny. It's like you look at the title versus saddle, and
yeah.
You say that now, and it sounds silly, but when you look at the heat and everything that's involved in it, it pulls you in. Like I mentioned with Chris Daniels, it pulls you in. And then I'll use Mr. Bass to flip to the current roster, and my absolute lack of enthusiasm and almost abject disdain for Dolph Ziggler. His heel turn turned him into an angry tween who neither cares nor hates anything. He's just ambivalent and just whiny, and it bugs me.
No, I agree. I mean, I was just thinking when you said the thing about the saddle, what made all of that work was, it sounds silly, but it was their life. You know, they played it like it was the most important thing in the world, and all of the, you know, and it was the championships and the friendships, and it wasn't, and talk about it with Dusty throwing a fit. I mean, it's like he cares. He's not, this is his life. And yeah, with Dolph Ziggler, it's just, well, you know, they won't let me win matches, and now steal the show. And then it is like, yeah, he's just lost in this twilight zone that I don't know how he ever gets out of it.
He does. He's basically the actress at the end of Sunset Boulevard, where he's just going up to people. He you know, if they let him do it, because I know it's TVPG, he'd be chain smoking in a corner somewhere as each person goes off to an audition. It's like, oh, you're excited about that.
Right.
I can tell you
where
that road leads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kind of what my whole function is in professional wrestling, you know, for the last 25 years. Yeah, I think I know exactly what you mean. Let's go to 516. 516, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey guys, how you doing? I wish you would let me talk to, you know, one of the legends of wrestling.
Well, you got a chance to talk to Rich Fan there. We're going to take another call. 140, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hi, guys. It's Jason from Australia. How are you?
Outstanding.
Yes.
Yeah, that other dude messed with our mojo. We got it. We're back now. We're back.
Yeah. All right. All good. Hey, Rich, I'm really, what I was calling up about, and I'm really glad you noted that. That's one of the things I noticed when Goldberg took the F5, is that the first thing he did was crawl to get the title. And I thought that was such great attention to detail by someone who supposedly doesn't get the business or whatever. I just thought that was so good by Goldberg. The other thing, I'm one of these people who is really happy that the Universal title is on the line between Goldberg and Lesnar, because I believe that if that is your biggest match, it should be for the championship, especially the Universal title. And I think we have a situation now with just Goldberg holding that championship. You know, he holds the title so well. I think we have a situation now where fans are in their mind are going to be thinking, geez, I wonder which one is the more prestigious title. Is it the WWE Championship or the Universal? Now, if the Universal title goes on Brock Lesnar, now you're sort of building up a bit of a lineage to the title where some real big stars have had it. And I think you want to have that situation down the line where fans, you know, one month they might think it's the WWE Championship, the other month they might think it's the Universal title. I think you want that situation where fans are, you know, are sort of comparing the two and wondering which one is the more prestigious, because I think that builds a lot more excitement. But I guess my main concern with the matches, even though I agree with making it for the Universal title, is that I just don't want to see the crowd crap all over it if it's the last match. And I think that is a situation that could happen. You know, if there's a lot of resentment built towards Goldberg and Lesnar that they've so-called taken the spot away from Kevin Owens, what are the chances that the crowd do crap all over that match last? Do we see another repeat of WrestleMania 20? How do you navigate that?
I'm not so concerned about them turning on Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg because they see them as part-timers or phonies or whatever it is. But I talked a lot with Wade about this on Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I'm concerned about them going 5 or 6 minutes and the match falling apart, because we don't know, you know, they bought a lot of time for Bill Goldberg to practice. And he talked about, you know, with that interview with ESPN that, you know, going to, when it was going to be a one-off program, he was going to have one match at SummerSlam. He talked about how, you know, he wasn't ready physically to do this. And it's been a long, he wasn't the greatest wrestler in the world in the first place. It'd been 17 years before that. We've seen him do very limited. We've seen him take one bump and do two or three, you know, F5 jackhammers, and that's it. Not F-house, but spears and jackhammers. And so, you know, can Brock Lesnar and he put together a match? And so if it falls apart 4 or 5 minutes in, I could see the crowd turning on him then. Now, I think one thing that's going to help the match, but it scares me a little bit too, as far as injuring Bill Goldberg, because that would be a disaster too, is that part of the match can be Brock Lesnar tosses Bill Goldberg up in the air on these suplexes, and Goldberg lands, and that's, you know, that takes up a significant amount of time. But yeah, I'm really interested in that part and seeing that unfold. Rich?
Yeah.
I think one of the things I'm looking forward to, and this is kind of going back to what Travis talked about, and I don't think Goldberg's lazy. I'm not Goldberg, I'm sorry, Lesnar's lazy. But I do think he doesn't necessarily respect a lot of the current wrestlers on the roster, particularly citing the Dean Ambrose match and how Dean complained Lesnar did not want to do anything he wanted to do. I'm looking at WrestleMania, and the first thought in my head with this match is we need to see a little more of the 04 to 0. Well, I'd say the 04. No, it wasn't 04. Anyway, we need to see some of the younger Brock with a little more variety of moves, so that way you can appreciate if Goldberg were to be German suplex and he flips out of it, or do any of the little tricks he did during his match against DDP, which was, you know, ballyhooed as one of his better matches earlier in his, you know, run to greatness. I think that match won't get crapped on by the fans, mainly because no one has a mindset of the prior WrestleMania match where both of these guys are leaving. The only person that's loyal is the injured guy who has to be the special guest referee.
My
concern is now that, you know, you fast forward, what, 13 years, now you've got a mindset of the fans is that you've got two guys there that are part-timers. I'm not saying I think this, but a lot of the fans saying we've got two guys that are part-timers, they don't deserve to be in this position, which is sort of annoying. I'd sort of take it another way. I would have no issue if this match is 2 minutes, but the way that I see it happening is that we're going to see an exact repeat of what happened at Survivor Series, except Lesnar's going to kick out. And then you have a situation where he might avoid another one and hit him with an F5.
Yeah, I very much think that's how the match starts. I'm sorry. I did want to interrupt you on this. I very much think that's how the match should start, because everybody's going to go again. And, you know, a kick out of that last second, it's going to it's going to put the match is going to be off to a good start doing that. I really do think so. We'll see.
Yeah. I think they're going to exactly replay what happened at Survivor Series. He'll kick out. Maybe less than F5, Goldberg kicks out. I have no issue with the match going 2 to 3 minutes, and it's just heavy artillery moves. And the story is that Lesnar had to go for the F5 early because he can't afford to let Goldberg settle in, or he's got no confidence. Like, he has to hit him with it early, or else he won't know what to do. The other match is obviously Roman Reigns and The Undertaker. I guess from your guys' point of view, quite simply, how do you book this? I mean, I look at it a couple of ways. Roman Reigns beats The Undertaker clean and they go for their handshake of respect. Crowd's going to crap all over it. Roman Reigns turns heel on The Undertaker, maybe to win. What I don't want to see, if that was to happen, once again, I'm a bit against the crowd here. I don't want the crowd to start chanting yes if Roman Reigns turns heel, because I think we've got parts of the crowd who start to chant yes and to start to cheer things because they're like, yes, this is something in the storyline that I want to see happen. Yes, this is part of the character I want to see happen. Like we saw with Ziggler. People were chanting yes for Ziggler because it's like, yeah, finally, Dolph, you're showing a bit of an edge. We like to see this. I don't want the crowd to cheer a development in the character instead of the actions of the character. So I can understand why the WWE find this a bit of a tricky situation. I just don't want, you know, Roman Reigns beating the crap out of The Undertaker and an image of people chanting yes because they're happy to see Roman Reigns snap. So once again, if you're put in this booking situation and you're thinking of it, you know, from an intrinsic point of view, you know, how do you go about it?
Go ahead.
I think one of the first things you have to do is what they've been doing, and that's add respect to both of the participants in the match. I personally don't see it either way as, obviously I know we know where the direction may be going, but I don't see it as Goldberg as a lamb to the slaughter, nor do I see it as Lesnar as a guy that's washed up past his prime, only doing this because UFC doesn't want him anymore. These two are legitimate tough guys who I want to see get in a barroom brawl. And the last time I checked, unless you're watching the movie They Live, barroom brawls don't go 30 minutes. They go 10 minutes, if that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. As far as Reigns and Undertaker, again, I think a lot of this match relies on Undertaker and his hip. And, you know, there's a lot, you know, with Undertaker, you can play, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors you can put into the presentation to take up for that. Reigns will be fine as far as physically goes. I think Reigns wins, kicks out of some stuff, and the crowd doesn't like it, and they go on to the next match. But he wins clean. That's my guess. I mean, and that's also, but when you start thinking about finishes, even with the turning heel, everywhere you go with Roman Reigns and Undertaker, you know, there's real danger at the end of it. And there's also just the danger of, is this, again, a year, 2 years past it for Undertaker. So, that's, you know, and I say that with all the respect in the world, but I mean, that's going to be part of it too. But
one of the things that you want to think about too, Bruce, and it's my nightmare scenario, and I didn't even want to bring it up when Jason said it, but now that you said that, as far as the Undertaker and 2 years too soon, I think he's going to kick out of the tombstone.
Yeah, I think so.
Roman's going to kick. I think he's going to kick out, and I think people are going to lose their minds, and not in a good way. I mean, as much as people complained about Brock tossing the Undertaker around when he broke the streak, watching Roman basically no-sell a tombstone pile driver, and then Undertaker, hey, in my mind, I don't know who's going to help them with this. I hope it's an Arn Anderson or someone like that. He can't. You cannot beat the Undertaker with a Superman punch.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think you can beat the or even two or three of them. That's interesting. I wonder what else they do. So maybe they come up with something new from Reigns. I don't know, but you know, we're going to. I don't know. It might be two or three Superman punches because that's what they did with Strowman. That's what.
Nah, I can't do that. That's so lame. Yeah. You know what? If they're going to do Reigns versus Lesnar, or I say they do that the next night on Raw or whatever, I'd have Reigns defeat the Undertaker with the F5. Since that's the only move that put him down, and then work a storyline from there. And I'd have Reigns pull the F5 from Lesnar.
That's not bad, because even if you don't want to do it if you don't want to pull the trigger the next night at Raw, and you want to have the part-time champion, which I don't know that they do, But let's say they save it for two pay-per-views down the road, Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. You set the story up by him using the F5. Like, the intrigue will definitely be there with that. And again, all this is, it's Roman Reigns. So that's, that's definitely part of it. So Jason, appreciate the call. Appreciate you finding us on Saturday night. I would ask you, what time of the day it is in Australia, but I already gone down the end there today.
Oh, that's okay. Wait a minute. Did you already roll the clock back, Jason?
No, I haven't done that. I think I know. Actually, where I am in my part of Australia, we don't actually do that. It's only on the East Coast. But I know you guys have that coming up there, don't you?
Yeah, we spring forward
right now,
a few hours.
Yes, don't forget
to spring right now, my time is 20.
Yeah.
Right now, my time is 20 past 8. So, but, Bruce, you know what? Don't worry about embarrassing yourself, because I understand Americans aren't meant to know what goes on around the world. It's only the rest of the world that's meant to keep up with you. I understand the rules there.
burn. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. That was a good one, eh? I'll leave you that one for a Saturday night. That's pretty good for me on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, I would say. Ribbon on the square. Appreciate the call every week. Good stuff. Rich, say hello to your family for me. I hope they have a very good evening. I really hope they have a very good evening. Happy birthday to your son. Thanks for accommodating me and my, and I guess your families too, but our obsession. So, good deal. Good show.
Oh yeah. Same. I enjoyed it. I hope everyone got a kick out of it, because I really enjoyed talking about these subjects. And, good luck to Duke. I think I can be magnanimous enough to say that.
Yeah, magnanimity is just dripping off all over you. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks particularly to VIP members. And we'll be back next week on Friday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host 3 other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost 3 decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. This is love.